Welcome to Two Teas in a Pod. I'm Kate Diaz, a Manchester math teacher and elected president of CEA, the Connecticut Education Association. We are Connecticut's largest teachers union, representing tens of thousands of professional educators across the state.
And I'm Jocelyn Delancey, a fifth grade teacher in Darien, elected vice president of CEA and president of CEF, the Connecticut Education Foundation, CEA's charitable arm.
In every episode, you'll hear thought-provoking interviews, as well as actionable tips and strategies that you can implement in your daily life. We'll have stimulating discussions to help you become a more informed and effective educator and advocate for your students and the teaching profession.
Thanks for spending some time with us today. Now let's jump right into Two Teas in a Pod.
Today we are joined by Pam Penn from East Hampton. She, God bless, is a middle school teacher. But most importantly today, she is here to join us as a special education teacher. And she does carry with her the hat of building rep, secretary, and been on the bargaining unit. So she brings multiple tiers of expertise. We are also joined by Danielle Fragoso from Madison. And she is also a special education teacher in the high school. She is the vice president of her local and serves statewide on what we lovingly refer to as CACTPUS, which is essentially guidance around instruction to our legislature. So we have some serious experts here today, and we are going to get down and dirty about special education.
Yeah, and one of the things that we really want to focus on is, you know, what draws special education teachers to the profession in that specific field? And then also, you know, what's driving our special education teachers out? Because as we look at our shortage here, we know that the area that is finding the most significant loss of educators is the field of special education. So I think let's start with, you know, what really drew you in to this field? You know, it takes a very caring and really smart and sophisticated educator to become a special education teacher. So what brought you into that?
All right, I'll start. I'm Pam. I actually was drawn into speech language pathology a long time ago. But when I first started, I didn't want to work with students and was children. I worked with adults. So got in, you know, a lot of learning around that. When I had my own children, that's when I decided to change over to education. And I do. I love it. I love the students that come in every day. I love to be able to work with them, even at their lowest or their highest. I love to be able to take where they're at and then move them up and around and show them that they can do things.
Absolutely. That makes a lot of sense to me. It's what innately draws people, I think, to teaching in general is the idea of like, I can make a difference here. But I think in special education, the fact that you can kind of identify sort of the need and really kind of fine tune and finesse, sometimes they're small gains, right? Mm-hmm. Like sometimes they're small, but really impactful. So that makes sense to me. Daniel, how about you?
I just wanted to advocate for kids. I think growing up in a bilingual home, I knew what it was to be different. Mm. So I wanted to advocate for those kids that kind of like had extra needs, I guess.
Yeah.
So I wanted to advocate for them.
That makes a lot of sense. I think, you know, one of the things, it's almost like when you talk to social workers, right? Social workers often drive towards that field because they benefited or maybe didn't from those services. And therefore, you really see the importance of it and the high value. So, I mean, I think that's the feel-good part, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's the part that warms your soul, makes you happy to be there. But we know that we started the school year with 25% of our vacancies were in special education. Mm-hmm. I would say that across the state right now, if you were to pop open the vacancies, that's probably pretty consistent. We've seen more than one special educator who said, uncle, right, this season. And I think there might be some other way that I could really advocate or help kids that is a lot less stressful. So talk to us a little bit about what does that mean? Because I think the average person, including a non-special ed teacher, doesn't really know what that means. So who wants to go first?
I'll go first. I was having a conversation with actually one of our special ed teachers this morning, and she basically explained, she's like, I need to know everything that a regular ed teacher does. Plus, I need to know my students and to be able to advocate for them and do the modifications and provide the accommodations that they need. But additionally, as a regular education teacher, you need to know the curriculum. They're changing the curriculum, but they're not invited to the meetings about the curriculum. Mm. And then additionally, we have a lot of, you know, social emotional goals around as just school-wide that we're responsible to try to carry out as well and to be in those platforms and to help those kids in those ways. So it's pretty much just you know, they're finding that there's the regular ed part as well as the special ed part. They just pile it on, and there's not any more time in their day than there is a regular education teacher's day.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. What are you finding, Danielle?
I find that I have a resource classroom, but I also co-teach. And I find that the pressure to get their IEP goals and objectives done when I only have one prep during the day. So I might have reading objectives, math objectives, transition objectives. I have to implement all of those for all of the kids in my caseload, in addition to co-teaching geometry. And I'm not a content specialist in geometry, but I'm supposed to be able to deliver that content. And we don't necessarily even have shared preps all the time. So I think that there's just a lot of demands and expectations put, and a little added pressure as a special ed teacher because we're legally liable for that IEP. So it's just a lot of pressure all day long.
Now, when you talk about the time in your day and the lack of time to kind of work through those objectives, let's get real tangible. Mm-hmm. Are you talking about paperwork you have to complete, modifications for lessons, actual additional time spent with kids, or C, all of the above?
All the above. For the goals and objectives, I might have, say, 8 students in my classroom that period. I might have to work on math objectives with one student, and I'm designing the curriculum for that. I'm designing the reading goal and objectives that I have to work on with 3 other students in the class. So we're having to design all of our lessons, implement it for each specific student, deliver it, and with the lack of para support and the para shortage, teachers are really finding it difficult to balance all of that, to not only design it but implement it.
Right.
So it's tough.
Let's not forget about the amount of meetings and evaluations that you have to do, right? Because for every student on your caseload, mm-hmm. there's at least one IEP meeting, at least mm-hmm. A year.
At least.
And then, you know, you've got your yearly evaluations, you've got your triannual evaluations. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, I don't think many districts have evaluation teams. So it's the responsibility of that case manager and the other service providers on the team to provide that mm-hmm. testing for that student. So that coupled with your caseload and making sure their goals and objectives are met, as well as, you know, if you have a co-teaching class too, you're not just responsible for your students that you work with, you're also responsible for a full class of students that you might only see that period.
And knowing how those kids are doing and having to help them with their individual needs and grading the papers and designing the worksheets that are going out. I mean, it's a lot of work, but teachers are facing that across the state, across the country.
And our special educators actually had to attend the data team meetings that our regular education teachers do as well and provide data and information on all students, like you were saying, with the regular ed and special ed in those classrooms.
So how many students do you have on your caseload, Pam?
Currently now I have about 30 students.
30 students. How about you, Danielle?
Selling point for Madison. I have about 16 kids on my caseload.
Okay. Now here's the magic question. Mm-hmm. What's kind of, if you as a teacher could decide, like, this would be the optimal amount, what would it look like? Probably not 30.
Probably not, but I do know that there are some even in our district that are upwards to 50. You know, and I know there's right. a lot of districts that have even more. It's hard because there's a lot of outside time that's spent. So it's right. not just the time spent with the student, but it's the time that maybe they have a speech generating device. So I need to take the iPad and program that mm-hmm. for them. Or if there's a problem during the day, I personally also have students that wear listening systems. Mm-hmm. So if there's a problem that goes on with that, I'm the first person to come in to troubleshoot. And again, like you mentioned, all of the evaluations that have to be done, which approximately takes 6 to 8 class periods. And our class periods are about 45 minutes each.
Okay.
To be able to really get a good read about, you know, what's going on with each student.
So it's fair to say that what you see is not what you get, right? Like when you deal with a special education setup and mm-hmm. and kind of trying to pull together what a good caseload looks like, it's a complex question to answer in that not all students have the same need level mm-hmm. and that you could presumptively have 12 students that take 10 times more time than somebody who has a caseload of maybe 24. Right? Like you could look at it in a variety of ways.
Yeah, that's why a couple of years ago, I actually encouraged our district to look at more workload versus caseload.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because of that reason.
And were they open to that?
They were, actually.
Well, that's helpful. So, and have you found that to be a difference maker?
I do, because I think there's a better understanding of, like you said, that variety of student that you have versus, you know, I might have a student that's nonverbal and needs, you know, a lot more. I need to train the interventionists that work with them and the special education teacher, talk to the BCBA a little bit more than I would just my student that has an articulation problem.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. How about you, Danielle? Do you feel like caseload, workload, are those things getting balanced, or is there a better way?
I'd say that my caseload is perfect. I mean, I can't mm-hmm. complain about a caseload of 16 because I know that many of my colleagues have much more. But I'm not sure if they're co-teaching necessarily as well.
Right.
So their class size might be smaller, or they might have more time to do the caseload. So it's done differently everywhere. So it depends on how the school runs their model okay. on caseload size. And I would agree that it depends on the needs of the students. So I might have a couple more intense students. So I might have a couple less kids on my caseload. And our school lets us manage that. They're awesome about that.
And I would say, I think when school districts are staffing special education teachers and you look at that co-teaching model, mm-hmm. I think that the model of co-teaching can be really successful. Mm-hmm. But if they're looking at it as, well, I'm going to use Danielle as a co-teacher because she only has a caseload of 16, it doesn't really
benefit the kids
or the staff, right? So I think that as districts, if anyone's listening, are looking at the co-teaching model, mm-hmm. It can be a really successful model, but as long as it's staffed the right way and fairly, so that someone who has a caseload isn't adding an additional set of students. Because we don't really look at FTEs for special education students, whereas if I were a high school teacher taking on a sixth class or an extra class, I would get additional FTE. Mm-hmm. But we don't really look at it that way for our special education teachers, and we probably should.
I was just going to say, it doesn't mean we can't.
No, but we should. We absolutely should.
And I'll say, you know, I'll do a little shout out here. So I had a lot of opportunities to co-teach with a special education teacher, and I found those to be incredibly valuable. But they weren't math experts. You know, I'm a high school math teacher, and I think part of that is recognizing the roles that you play. Mm-hmm. You know, when I had the opportunity to co-teach with another math teacher, and we were doing Algebra 2 co-taught, mm-hmm. we approached that tactically as two math teachers. When I co-taught with a special ed teacher, we tactically approached it with our areas of expertise. And we talked about, okay, what's your role versus my role, and how do we make sure the kids understand and value both of us in this space? So co-teaching, you know, I'm a big fan of the model done well, mm-hmm. and I'm a horrible, horrible critic of when it's done miserably, because mm-hmm. It becomes a real work nightmare. So, you know, I think that's the word of caution in that special ed land, because it's easy to say, look at it. And you can see him playing a numbers game, right? Mm-hmm. Like, look, we have all these kids getting needs met in math because we put Danielle in this classroom. And that's not necessarily a fair representation of the services.
Well, I'd like to bring up something that we probably don't really like to talk about, but it is probably one of the bigger issues of the burdens that we talk about in terms of time and our ability to have more time to work directly with students. And that's paperwork. Mm-hmm. So I think...
Or computer-based work.
So I think that...
with the ever-popular CTSEDS program.
The new generation paperwork.
I think there's mm-hmm. there's two issues, right? Because I think that in general, educators across the board have a lot of paperwork that we could probably reform and look at to see how we could do it in meaningful ways. But I absolutely think special education has an excessive amount of paperwork, some that's really necessary and important to make sure we progress monitor and do the right things for kids, but others that might be maybe a little tedious, time-consuming, and could probably be done differently. So let's talk a little bit about, dare I say, CTSEDS, and also some other paperwork, computer work issues.
Because I do think this is a moment for us to really rethink how we approach this workspace to make it more palatable, right? And manageable, right? Like, so that you're not buried under
and
this.
Effective, right?
Oh, God,
I mean,
forbid.
Our goal is to ensure that these students across the board find success. Mm-hmm. And if we're doing stuff that doesn't really lead to that, it seems like our time could be better spent servicing and helping and supporting our students. So
the floor is yours, ladies. Let's talk about paperwork.
I mean, paperwork is just part of the job. I mean, I knew it going in. Mm-hmm. It didn't deter me from wanting to help kids. But I just wish people that were in charge would collaborate with school districts. I don't know if they do, but it doesn't sound like... It just seems like in education, they roll things out without taking their time to think things through. And then the impact is on a teacher.
Right.
When it's all said and done, it's on me when I'm trying to sit and write my first IEP, and it's taken me way too long and I have way too much stuff to do. That's just added pressure that does need to happen. So I just wish that they had rolled things out a little bit better with CT sets.
I was going to say, can we go the clock back a little bit into not even writing your first CT sets IEP, but how about trying to learn the platform when there's no training? There literally was no training sent our way. And I just talked to a colleague from another district, and they said they actually asked the state to come in and do some training for them. And then when they had questions, they could not answer their questions and show them how to do it. So it's really kind of been, just to learn as you go. Trial by fire, so to speak, this year.
In a space where you don't exactly have the time to do that. There's not a lot of opportunity in your day to say, I'm just going to sit down and see how CT SEDS works. And then to hope that people have enough intuitive nature to be able to make that system function. And I know there's been a lot of talk about it. I always laugh. I'm like, if you see four people and their educators standing together, I guarantee you CT SEDS is being talked about, even if they're not special education teachers, because those of us who aren't know and have a lot of empathy for how do you take a job that's already hard and make it harder? And I think that's what sort of the pressure of this feels like. And I want to say we did approach the State Department about this last year and say, listen, we're in a kind of a tough spot. And they had already like signed licenses and agreements. Like that train had left the station. And then to have the rollout be such a struggle, I think has just been an incredible extra burden carried by, to your point, Danielle, you know, all of these decisions get made at this high level, the impact of which is felt right ground level with a teacher trying to give kids what they need.
And I think that's what the teachers are concerned about. You know, if all of this is rolling out, then did they really care about the repercussion of the teacher? And do I want to work in a system like that? And I think that's why a lot of our teachers are really questioning whether they can, A, sustain this amount and level. Because I actually thought about it last week, and as I'm driving my son, you know, to my son's hockey game, I'm like, you know, what can I do here? And let's just think about it this way. Normally it takes you an hour to get to work, but you decided to get a new car. The new car, they said, this is great. It's going to be a great new car. So you get in your car the first day, you start to go to work. But every couple of feet, something goes wrong with the car. It could be as simple as the door opens or the trunk won't stay closed. But so your normal 1 hour drive to work is now going to take you 16 hours. Okay, which is one of my colleagues actually clocked how much time she spent on doing her first IEP and CT sets. Word. It took 16 hours. But you still have to go to work, spend your 7 hours, somehow come home, take care of your family, and do what you need to do afterwards. Oh, and somewhere in there along one of your stops, in order to continue, you have to get the approval of somebody else to come down and approve what you've done to your car so that you can continue on. But you know, you're sit there and you're waiting before you can continue on your day. So that's just really what it's done. It's taken maybe what could be an hour or two process to really like a 16-hour process in order to accomplish this. And it's just time that we don't even have. If you try to add all of that up, there's not that time in the day.
All right. So let me ask this. Is it getting better? It's now January. This rolled out in the, you know, September.
Well, of course it's going to get better. I mean, we're educated professionals. We figure things out.
So it's getting better despite.
And they are doing some things to change. They actually put out a, whoever is doing CT SEDS is putting out a weekly thing of updates. If you go on and you look at it and see what they've actually changed.
Okay.
So it's in, I think, a Google slide presentation or whatever that's available on.
Are the glitches settled?
No. Not all of them.
No.
Okay.
Because that's part of the issue, right? You could learn how to use the program really well, even if the training was superior, which it wasn't, or even existing. There's still these glitches that make it even more time consuming, correct?
I mean, it's still more time consuming. Like,
right.
I try to get them done at work, but it's nearly impossible with the format as it is. And I'm tech savvy. So it didn't take me that long to figure it out. I mean, it did. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was painful. But you figure it out and you move forward. But after working for 5 minutes, if you're inactive, you lose all the data that you just typed in.
So it doesn't save.
It doesn't save automatically. You have to click the button. So if a student comes into my office to ask me a question on their work that they're working on, I was typing away in an IEP for 15 minutes. if I didn't hit that save button, it's gone.
Goodness, Google Docs saves exactly. On a regular basis.
5 minute timeout is ridiculous. I mean,
their response to that was put it in a Google Doc, save it, and then that way, if it doesn't save, you still have it and can go back to it.
But then you have to cut and paste, like
so. Do the work twice.
Correct.
Oh boy.
I mean, and that sounds like a great solution. I mean, I don't know why you didn't think of that yourself.
Silly.
And I even think the parent portal times out too. So I had one of our parents say that they got something, a message, you know, you have 109 minutes in order to sign this. And it was sent out during the middle of the day. So it's not necessarily at a time when you can stop and say, oh, sorry, especially if you're a teacher, I can't teach right now. I got to sign this before the next 60 minutes is up.
Well, and 100, it's one of those things, right? 109 minutes sounds like a long time. But how many of you have, God forbid, not looked at your email every 5 minutes? Right. Like, right? You know, so I think, I think that we've covered a little bit of ground here. But let me ask and kind of leave us with a final thought. Is Connecticut ripe for, like, special ed reform? Is there things we think, if we got some smart teachers together, that we could make some productive, meaningful improvements to the way special ed teachers are asked to do their jobs?
Definitely. I think there's always room for reform anywhere and anytime and anything that we can always do better.
Look at that reflective teacher. Well, I want to say thank you to both of you for coming in, sharing your experiences. I hope that people who have the opportunity to hear this kind of get a little understanding of the work that you're doing. And I think it's really, you know, important, meaningful work. And I'm so very grateful that, please don't leave. Stay, right? We need you.
Well, and I think it's important for those people listening to this podcast today to remember that a couple critical things I heard. One is listen to the special education teachers, respect their feedback, show that you care. And when you're trying to make change, include them in the conversation, especially with professional development, new curricular rollouts, and just ensuring that they have the right tools in place.
Listen to the teachers.
Yeah. Crazy Imagine concept.
All right. And thank you both very much for having
thank
us.
Thank you. Always so much. A pleasure. We want to thank all of our members for all you do and for listening to the latest edition of Two Teas in a Pod.
For more education talk, subscribe to Two Teas in a Pod and find us at cea.org/podcast or wherever you get your podcasts.
Like what you heard? Share a podcast with your friends and colleagues and spread the word. Because we are
stronger together.